Welcome, Red Ice members. Thank you for tuning in. It's nice to have you along. We have Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince with us, and we are going to change gear a bit in this second segment and talk about their book, The Stargate Conspiracy, this fascinating story that connects Egyptology with the secrets of the pyramids, remote viewing, Freemasonry, NASA, the face on Mars, Uri Geller, even Aleister Crowley and L. Ron Hubbard, Edgar Cayce, ufology, SRI, and I can go on and on here. There's so many subjects that are coming together under this umbrella, if you will, of the Stargate conspiracy. And this is about how this is potentially being brought back into the modern world, if you will, and it's kind of wrapped in a veil of mystery and intrigue. And the question is if there is a more sinister plan behind this to create kind of a new belief system, if you will. Very interesting. So I want to begin at the top and basically get a little bit on your take of what the Stargate is. There are so many different theories out there right now of what this is and what it means and so forth. But in regards to the Stargate in the title of your book, how would you define it?
Well, can I first explain how we came to write the book? Because we wrote The Templar Revelation, in which we were looking at the, you know, towards the end of the book anyway, looking at the Egyptian roots of some aspects of Christianity. And we thought it would be great to write a book that concentrated on, you know, Egyptian religion, ancient Egypt. But as we started to look into it, we got more and more intrigued by what seemed to be going on in modern Egypt. And we're talking about the sort of lead up to the millennium, when there was this very fevered atmosphere about all sorts of belief systems. So that's kind of how we came to write a book about Egypt, but actually it ended up not the book that we were going to write. It was a book about modern Egypt, very largely.
Interesting. And the Stargate, is there a connection here to the ancient gods of the ancient world? Does that imply that there even is an extraterrestrial connection here?
Well, that's one of the main questions that we found ourselves dealing with. Just in terms of the title, we called it the Stargate Conspiracy, one, because we needed to call it something, and this phrase Stargate was obviously one that kept coming back again and again. Obviously, it goes, you know, we remember the movie of the mid-90s that kind of linked that extraterrestrials in ancient Egypt, which always seems to be an irresistible connection.
Right.
Part of the reason for that is because in the ancient Egyptian language, for reasons nobody really knows, they use the same word for star and gate, as if they saw the stars in some way as gateways or some kind of connection between them. But even in other ways, that one of the things that we brought into this story, or that, you know, we realized was connected with this story, was the American Pentagon's remote viewing experiments from the 1980s and 90s, you know, when they were trying to use for military and intelligence purposes. They were exploring the military and intelligence potential of paranormal abilities, such as, you know, what used to be called clairvoyance, but they decided to call remote viewing. And, you know, one of their projects, they gave the name Project Stargate for no particular, we don't know why they did that. So it's a phrase that kept coming back, and as we needed a handy shorthand for what we thought was going on, the conspiracy we thought was at the heart of it, thought, let's call it Stargate Conspiracy. Looking at this, you know, as you said, it's the connection between ancient Egypt and extraterrestrials.
Right.
And this was the kind of thing that we were kind of grappling with in the 90s when we were doing this research, because in that lead up to the millennium, there was a lot of interest and speculation about suppressed discoveries in Egypt. Something about, you know, the ancient world that was actually directly related to the modern world. You know, something was going to be discovered. You remember all that debate about the Hall of Records supposed to be underneath the Sphinx?
Yeah, definitely.
That would, when it was found, would not only solve the mysteries of the origins of the Egyptian civilization, but be something directly relevant to changes in the world today.
Yeah.
And that it seemed to be connected in some way to an extraterrestrial origin of human civilization, of extraterrestrial guidance of civilization, and the opening of the Stargate at the time of the millennium or shortly afterwards was supposed to kind of represent perhaps the re-establishing of contact with those extraterrestrials that the ancient world regarded as gods, space gods, if you like. Now, this is all the things that we were looking at and were researching, and there came a moment in our research when we actually realized that that's what we were supposed to think. That's what a lot of this information, or actually most of it was rumors of undiscovered things beneath the pyramids or the Sphinx or somewhere in Egypt that was going to reveal this, that we were supposed to be thinking that somebody was deliberately manipulating all these great archetypal ideas essentially to create a new religion for a new millennium.
Mm.
And like all the old religions, it would be the people in charge of that, the ones who had access to communication with these star gods, who would be the ones with the power, whether the star gods existed or not. And that's one of the kind of things that we had to grapple with. There's this whole thing converging on the idea that the great gods of ancient Egypt, particularly the nine gods of the great Ennead,
right,
of the religion of Heliopolis, which was the religion that motivated the building of the pyramids, that these nine gods were actually extraterrestrials. They were about to return, and that certain people would be, the channel for their revelation. But we think the whole thing was actually a manipulation in order to make us think that.
And also, I mean, rather worryingly, one of the things in the background to all this is that it builds on the idea that humanity could never have done, the great achievements, for example, building the Great Pyramids in Egypt. You know, we could never have done it for ourselves. We needed help, or it was done by extraterrestrials.
Right.
I find that very worrying, actually.
Right.
You know, that putting humanity down and automatically looking for, an external source.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's a very good point. And I mean, it's someone then, seems to be promoting this idea, and this might be, unbeknownst to independent authors and so forth that are doing their own research on their own end, but then in the end, maybe then potentially they are being encouraged, if you will, by this group that is promoting the idea. But maybe we can get into a little bit more of who potentially it is that is promoting this particular new religion, if you will, of the New Age then.
Right. In a way, it's the usual suspects, I suppose, because certainly the main people that are pulling the strings are the intelligence agencies, particularly the American intelligence agencies. So no surprise there. Now, one of the reasons we came to this was, as many of your listeners that will have followed the story of your recent discoveries or alleged discoveries in Egypt. So there was a huge amount of this going on in the mid to late 90s as everyone geared up towards the millennium.
Yeah.
One of the things that got people thinking was that a lot of the companies, the American companies that were involved in looking for things in ancient Egypt, who were rumored to be digging for things in ancient Egypt, in modern Egypt, rather, American companies like SRI International, which were very heavily tied into the American defense and intelligence community.
And that's
huge amounts of contracts there.
And that's this Stanford.
A lot of people were saying, aha, that means the American government must know there's something there, really. So that's, that's the clue. That's the giveaway. But we looked at it from a slightly, very different point of view. Like, again, maybe they're not. They're not there because the American government knows there's something going on, but because they want to create the impression that they know that something's going on. It's a rather more kind of subtle version of it. So one is the intelligence agencies. Two, it was very closely linked to certain secret societies, certain Masonic orders, that seem to at least have, they borrowed some of the ideas from the mythology of Freemasonry, for example, and seeded this into a growing myth that was getting everyone really excited getting up to the new millennium. And we actually wrote the Stargate conspiracy, which came out in the summer of 1999.
Right,
Because we could actually see, if some kind of big event was going to be manipulated in some way, say on Millennium Night, after seeding all this kind of, creating all this expectation, manipulating all these archetypal ideas and getting everyone so emotionally wrapped up in looking towards Egypt at the millennium, we basically wrote the book as a warning to say, if anything happens, don't take it at face value.
Right.
But that's not to say that the book, once the millennium came and gone, there wasn't, a UFO hovering over the Great Pyramid at midnight on the last day of December 1999,
mm-hmm.
that means that the conspiracy went away. It could be gearing up, say, for 2012 now, isn't it?
Right.
Date. But it's the book is really about the manipulation of belief and showing how different ideas drawn from different Masonic and esoteric traditions were being used, and probably are at the moment being used, by quite hard-headed, military and intelligence types, in order to manipulate the way a lot of people think.
And the intelligence agencies, would you think that they are in the hands from the more the thinkers, if you will, then let's say of an esoteric branch of Masonic orders or other secret societies, that there are men involved in these orders that are using or utilizing the power of the intelligence structure, the intelligence agencies, in order to progress this agenda? Do you think that's correct, Clive?
Absolutely. One thing that's very hard, because it's such a convoluted and complicated game, is sometimes difficult to tell who's pulling the strings and who's having their strings pulled.
Because, right.
There is, and there always has been, a close tie-up between intelligence agencies and secret societies, particularly Masonic ones. That's just a fact. You can demonstrate this from the record. But this kind of, does that mean when you've got that situation with a Masonic order that's very closely linked or that has intelligence agents who are members of a Masonic order, does it mean that the intelligence agent has taken over the Masonic order, or does it mean the Masonic order has taken over the intelligence agency?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No.
But a lot of the personnel would be the same.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. And it's interesting to take a look at it, and obviously it's very difficult to pin this down or nail it down, and I guess we have to look at the fruits of what it is that they are doing. And eight years on from 2000, we're in 2008 now. Have we made any kind of contact? Many people suggest that the contact, if you will, then that is going on is in another nature. People are looking at the potential of even a faked alien invasion, the UFOs that are flying around over many areas in the UK right now, that this could in some way actually be connected with the defense industry, and this is actually human made craft. Lynn, any thoughts on that?
I believe it's not something that we go into very much in Stargate Conspiracy, because it's a slightly separate issue about UFOs generally, but certainly we believe that a lot of UFO events, and particularly the popular interpretation of them, have actually been stage managed by military and intelligence agencies, and this is actually a matter of record in America that they have actually done this. Now, whether that means that all UFOs have explained in terms of intelligence agency manipulation is another question, but certainly some have been. A lot of people don't realise that one of the things that intelligence agencies do, particularly American, particularly in CIA, is they like to experiment with belief systems, just in the sense of, if they're going to war with a country of or they want to manipulate events in a country with a particular faith, you know, I think Cuba was very Catholic. You know, there was some thought, you know, could they manipulate visions of the Virgin Mary to their advantage?
Right.
You know, now if you're going to war with an Islamic country, is there something about the belief that you could use? So I'm very interested in the way that beliefs and ideas originate and how they're spread. And to be frank in some bits, you know, it's how mad an idea you can make people believe for how long. And there's definite evidence that you know, the CIA have experimented with this, creating cults, giving them completely mad ideas, and seeing what happens to them.
Oh, yeah.
And create a doomsday cult, see what happens when doomsday doesn't appear, because it's something that they like to know.
Of course.
It is actually, I mean, don't get us wrong, we're not complete sceptics about, you know, paranormal or mystical things.
Right.
And certainly there does appear to be an element, not so, again, you know, we've got to be very careful, but an element of some UFO sightings that is basically paranormal. You know, and they behave, some of these cases, in very similar ways to the old, you know, stories about fairies appearing and, you know, goblins appearing or whatever. And there does seem to be some part of the human mind or psyche that maybe interacts with other forces. But it doesn't mean, what it doesn't mean, you know, if you see a UFO and it's actually a sort of up-to-date version of an old appearance of a fairy kind of thing, you know, I don't understand why people automatically assume, if they see something strange in the sky, that it means it's come from another galaxy or another star system.
Right.
Why does it have to be extraterrestrial?
Right. Well, exactly. That's a very good point. And again, I mean, we are not at this point, you know, privy to know all the inner workings of some of these black ops that are, you know, having trillions, if you will, of dollars at their disposal. And we don't know how far the research has gone and the progress has gone in regards to these technologies. So we could very, very well look at a scenario right now where you know, if hovering crafts appear, everyone thinks automatically that this is ET, extraterrestrial. But again, it might be human made. And of course, what we can point out is that there is one thing called Project Bluebeam, where there apparently is an old program going back many years that dived into this idea of actually faking or staging an alien invasion, and also in correlation with that, actually projecting religious images with holographic technology. So there's a wide variety of these kind of ideas going around, if you will, in the defense industry, definitely.
Well, yes. I mean, as far back as 1968, there was a vision, apparently, of the Virgin Mary, seen by hundreds and hundreds of people in Cairo, over one of the very few churches in Cairo. And it was first of all, a workman in the street thought there was a nun on the roof in difficulties, and so he went and got some friends, and they all standing, you know, hoping to help. And then they realised that it wasn't a nun; it just looked like somebody, you know, a woman in a long dress and a veil. But she was sort of fairly see-through, and she kind of bobbed along the edge of the roof. But the vision was there, I think, on and off, but mainly there for about 10 days. And people came and they saw it and they took photographs and they went away, and then it just went away.
Hmm.
And it does sound like somebody was having, well, I was going to say a joke, but, you know, quite a serious one. And what you were just saying about, you know, projecting holograms, that I always thought, reading that story, that was obviously a very early example of, you know, this kind of experiment.
Right, definitely. And there is another, I guess, strand to this as well. If we go back and talk about modern Egyptology and the what are they called, the guardians, right, Dr. Sahai Hawass, and there is a connection potentially between him, if I understand things correctly, between him and the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, isn't that right?
Yes, again, there's this whole kind of complex of connections, and yet again, have to be very careful and say you don't necessarily know who's pulling strings or having strings being pulled. But one of the things we're looking at, there's a whole, almost exactly 10 years ago, you know, there was this whole kind of debate going on where you had the what they called the alternative Egyptologists, you know, people like Robert Bovall and Graham Hancock, and who were arguing for this, one that Egyptian civilization has a much greater history going back to a lost civilization, and that it has some kind of relevance for us today. So that was kind of one group of people, and then you had the kind of slightly more new agey religious sorts, like the Edgar Cayce people, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, who had another set of beliefs to do with ancient Egypt, and you had the academic historians who were saying, or academic Egyptologists who were saying, nope, we know everything pretty much there is to know about ancient Egypt. We know when the pyramids were built. All this talk of, thousand years older history and Atlantis and all these prophecies by this guy is all kind of rubbish. And you have these kind of groups debating and arguing amongst themselves. But when you actually looked into it, the connections between the people on they're supposedly on different sides of the debate, they were much more closely connected than you thought. Like a couple of the leading Egyptologists involved in this debate had been funded or in some cases educated by the ARE, the Edgar Cayce people. But they were the ones that now sort of very, very publicly saying, all that stuff to do with Edgar Cayce is nonsense, and some of the connections just got kind of so odd. And also, then there were other connections with people who were connected with channeling cults. They involved people that were actually supposed to be channeling the ancient Egyptian gods who were revealing themselves to be extraterrestrials. And we found that basically the same people that were supposed to be on opposing sides, one alternative and one defending the kind of orthodox position, were much more closely connected than they ought to be, which gave you the idea that somebody behind all of it was just making this debate happen. And the best way to get people interested in ideas out is for people to have a really big argument about them.
Right.
People write books just saying, we believe the pyramids are many thousand years older than everyone says. That's one thing. But then you get somebody on the establishment side standing up and saying, you shouldn't be reading these books, because they are full of false information. That actually raises the profile of everybody.
Right.
We really found that, that there was people were being moved almost like chess pieces, some knowingly, some unknowingly, and that's what gave us this idea that actually it was the whole thing was being manipulated. For what end? And we said the way we looked at it is something I'd like to come back to in a moment. That was kind of creating a new religion, a new age type of religion, it could be just an experiment, as on a very grand scale, to see what happens when we seed these ideas in. Who accepts them? Who doesn't?
And let's not forget. I mean, the kind of basis of the New Age, in a way, is self help, and it's sort of a Gnostic understanding. Really, it's a great hunger for knowledge and for really overturning the certainties or what we've been told, which of course is very admirable. But then it seems that people have a hunger for being told what to do, basically. And a lot of New Agers, I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of New Agers have this thing that they want to be told what to do by some kind of guru, who then will take over their lives. And we've all come across them who absolutely, they will say, we went to the so-and-so channeler the other day, and he said we have to do this.
Yeah.
And you say to them, but, why don't you think for yourself? And they say, no, because he said, and it was so-and-so, it was one of the gods coming through him. And we have to do this. No matter how mad it will sound, they will do it. And that was the sort of thinking behind the setting up of, or at least so it seems, of several sort of doomsday-type cults, a couple of which we talk about in Stargate Conspiracy, where basically the little group sort of grew up around the channeler. And they were given increasingly as the millennium, well, not the millennium, but as a certain day which was going to be very big in their lives. They were told, like February the 13th or something was going to be the end of the world. And they were told by the god or the spirit that was coming through the channeler, who was their leader, to for example, to remove all metal from their clothing and to sell, and even more seriously, you know, sell their property and live in trees. And it sounds bonkers, sounds completely mad now, but people were actually told to do these things, and they did them.
Right.
And, of course, then February, the whenever, came and went, and the world didn't end, and there they were up trees with no property, you know, and no money because they'd done all these things. And one of the interesting things, of course, specifically to groups like, you know, puppet masters like the CIA, is what happens then, because they've been proved wrong. So how do they regroup? Do they regroup? What's the psychology behind regrouping? And that in itself is hugely interesting.
Yeah, indeed. And I can remind everyone, of course, of the cult called Heaven's Gate, you know, give away in the name potentially right there. That was Marshall Applewhite in back in, when was it, 1997, I think he killed himself with a bunch of people. And that seems to be at this point pointing towards definitely some involvement behind an intelligence group on that one, you know. So,
I mean, you can imagine the value to, you know, intelligence agencies and governments of the less scrupulous kind, of that ability to control people to the point that they will actually commit suicide for you. You know, to find out how you can pull people's strings to that degree is something that they, you know, they want to know that. How far can you actually make people do this?
Right.
It's kind of motivations for it, yeah.
So it's a potentially a combination between finding out how much you can control a population, and at the same time, kind of bringing in the ideas of a new age religion for that sense, because in a way, actually, we can maybe connect it with the previous segment that we did, because we talked about there that we're actually in one way kind of uncovering a lot of the background history of Jesus and Christianity itself. So what they might be interested in at this point is to, as the veils of mystery, if you will, falls from the old created religion of Christianity, as that falls apart in a way, they want to create something new that people can worship and venerate, potentially. Any comments?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, in the context of what we're talking about, in the context of our book, Stargate Conspiracy, and the whole idea of working up to the millennium or 2012, which is the next big one, the idea of providing people with something, as you say, up to date, a new quote religion, although they might not think of it as a religion, of course, but it's like the way, you know, it's the way forward, the one and only thing in their lives after a while. And this thing, what could it be? What's the most up-to-date sort of thing? Well, you know, I mean, certainly things seen in the sky, you know, UFOs, which are, you know, by themselves incredibly futuristic looking. We all think we know what they look like, you know, they're sort of cigar-shaped or they're round. And you see one of those and you think future, don't you? You think very modern, you think up-to-date.
Right.
So maybe, you know, these images have been projected wherever they're being seen, projected deliberately in order to whip up interest and see how different people react. You know, because it's the whole thing is a psychological experiment. It's about the human psyche.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as I say, when doomsday comes and goes and nothing happens, you know, what happens to the people who really believed in it? Not just the, you know, the financial, and but there's the social meltdown that, you know, you might expect would happen when the thing that they've been working towards, that they put, you know, everything into, just failed to happen. But I suppose, as you were saying, I mean, compared to the Heaven's Gate horrors, you know, basically losing, selling all your property and sitting up a tree, isn't that grim? But I mean, the Heaven's Gate thing just shows you how far you can push people. And of course, we mustn't forget, those people were happy to commit suicide. They were ecstatic when they did it.
Yeah.
Very similar to, you know, mustn't forget this, very similar mindset to the Christian martyrs of the first generation of Christian martyrs, who actually were so desperate to die, to be with Jesus, that they actually, you know, on several occasions they begged the local governors to kill them.
Hmm.
So it's there's a lot going on here. People don't change that much. It's just the flavor and the belief system that has to be tweaked.
Right. And I mean, if we look at the Book of Revelations, I think today that there are a lot of people around who are anticipating, if you will, the advent of the second coming of Christ, and they are in one way or another yearning for the apocalypse, or yearning for, you know, a world war, what have you.
Yes.
And this is creating an incredible dangerous mindset, you know.
Sorry, can I just say before we move on that that's very interesting to me, because you know, one of my interests is English literature, and as my background, and you know, reading lots of novels and or journalistic pieces from, say, the 1900s, and then say the 1930s. For example, George Orwell's output, and basically on both those sort of eras, you get people, highly thought of people, saying, "If only the bombs would come, if, you know, we'll get rid of this paltry world, you know, that this mundane world that is so horrible, and that everything will be overturned, and I don't mind dying, you know." So there was something in the air both times.
Yeah.
And now this is rather, you know, horrifying to consider that, you know, they got their wish. There were two world wars for them. So let's hope that not too many people think in this way.
Yeah, agreed. Why don't we talk a little bit more about the nine? We kind of quickly went by there. This is a fascinating subject, the Council of Nine. This is basically, as I understand it so far, this is a round table foundation that was set up probably 50 or even 60 years ago now, with people from, from the Astor family, Alice Bouvier, and even Arthur M. Young, from who was behind the Bell helicopter. And that was that's a connection quite clearly there to the defense industry, of course. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about these guys who were and gals who were around the Council of Nine. And as I understand it, these were channeling then the Ennead of the old Egyptian gods, right?
Yes, I mean, it's an absolutely fascinating story. But it can be told of one of two ways. I'll tell it the way that they wanted us to, you know, that it's been promoted in books during the 60s and 70s. And this is something that began in 1953, I believe. What we would now call a channeling cult, but it was one of the very first ones of these. It began in a place, as you say, the Round Table Foundation in Maine, in America, which was sort of supposed officially promoted as a kind of private psychic research facility, where they used to get in sort of mediums and clairvoyants and what have you, and do experiments. And it was funded, as you say, by some very wealthy families, including one of the main backers was a former vice president of the United States.
Hmm.
And it was run by a medical doctor named Andrea Puharich.
Right, right.
And over the course of, this began in the 1950s, where various people that came, mediums that they were working with, began to channel the same entities, which was a thing called the Council of Nine. It was a group of nine entities that just began in the normal way of kind of some kind of psychic entity, but gradually over time began to reveal itself more and more as an extraterrestrial, as a group of nine extraterrestrials, intelligences somewhere out there in the universe. And this thing actually went on. It began in the early 50s. It certainly went through to the 1980s. And the cast of characters that were involved with this is actually incredible. Over the course of time, it involved Uri Geller was brought in at one point. Uri Geller was a channel for the nine. He's actually kind of position subsequent to that was that, you know, basically he was in a trance at the time and doesn't really know what these entities that were talking through him were.
Right.
But Andrea Puharich was the person that went to Israel, who found Uri Geller, who brought him to America to be studied by SRI International, who we mentioned before.
Mm.
This was just before Uri Geller became famous, you know, in as a kind of media star. Another person that was involved with it at one point was Gene Roddenberry, person behind Star Trek.
Right.
And it kind of goes on and on. And that gradually the story that emerged, and always behind it, you know, the core of this group from the 50s onwards was Andrea Puharich. normally he would hypnotize people, as he did, for example, with Uri Geller. And when he hypnotized them, he would get them to make contact with this Council of Nine. Then gradually, the Council of Nine revealed themselves to be nine extraterrestrials, powerful extraterrestrials. And eventually, they then revealed themselves to be the great Ennead of the ancient Egyptian religion, the nine gods of ancient Egypt. So pulling all these things together, so now that the gods of ancient Egypt were now revealed as extraterrestrials. And this whole kind of coherent story emerged through many, many different mediums and channels over a long time. Now that's the story. There's been a few books written about them over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's been promoted. It's like something just happened in a paranormal research lab once, and it took on a life of its own because the nine are real.
What do you think?
Then we started to look at the career of Andrea Pihowicz.
Right.
And what we found was that he was a medical doctor, but he actually worked for the US Army. Although at the time he was involved with the Round Table Foundation, officially he had been discharged. Many of your listeners will be familiar with the MKUltra project, Joint CIA US Army mind control project of the 1950s and 60s. And what we found was that Pihowicz actually hadn't left the army to pursue this career as a sort of independent researcher into the paranormal, but he was still actually employed. He was a colonel in the US Army at the time he was working with the Round Table Foundation. And at that very same time, he was also working for the US Army's chemical warfare establishment in Maryland, which is where the US Army side of the MKUltra project was being conducted, and that he was actually working for that. He was actually working for the Pentagon. Just before working on the Round Table Foundation, he had put a briefing paper up to the Pentagon on the military and intelligence potentials of psychic abilities and how they ought to be researched, something eventually was to lead to the remote viewing projects of the 70s and 80s and Project Stargate.
Oh.
So that's when you start thinking, hang on, the guy basically behind the Council of Nine was actually working for the US government and the CIA, and we charted his career in various very secretive capacities, all to do with kind of mind control and manipulation of belief.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and also gadgets. I mean, because he one of the things that he was very good at, I mean, was that he actually developed, he invented, for example, hearing aids. One of the things that emerged from, you know, when we were looking at his career was that he experimented with tiny, tiny radio transmitters that you could put, you know, in hearing aids, or indeed in teeth. So, of course, you would get voices literally in your head.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He also worked with one of the first people to work with hallucinogenic drugs and what they could do, and he was a master hypnotist. Now, then when you go back, once you know that, and you go back over the story of the Council of Nine, and you realise that, you know, he was behind everything that happened in it, he would get, you know, whenever they went through a series of mediums who, for one reason or another, would drop out, and they'd get somebody else, like he went and found Uri Geller. But Pihowicz would then hypnotise them or do something else to them. So you actually think, you know, in order to get them to, quote, channel the independent entities, the Council of Nine, no, actually he's not. He's creating the Council of Nine. He's getting them to channel what he wants.
Hmm.
But once you know that, it just puts an entirely different perspective on that picture. And, excuse me, again, the Council of Nine, the whole cult around them, say, involved people, say, like Gene Roddenberry, Star Trek, involved politicians. It began being funded by Henry Wallace, who had been vice president to Roosevelt.
Right, right.
In later times, some of the people involved with the Council of Nine channeling were very close to Al Gore at the time when he was the time he was vice president. And then, of course, obviously he stood for president himself. And you said there were powerful families. I mean, a lot of the money for this thing came from, like originally with the Astors families like that, but it always continued to be funded by people of that stature.
Mm.
It involved politicians, but the whole thing... Oh, we also... The Round Table Foundation, originally, we found it was being funded by, yes, the Astor family and others, but it was also getting grants, secret grants, from the Pentagon.
Really?
So, actually, it wasn't an independent thing at all. It was a government-backed thing. I mean, it's all kind of X-Files territory here, you know.
But actually, I mean, when you think about it, all these incredibly powerful people, rich, powerful people, they wouldn't have gone along with something that was, you know, absolute rubbish from the word go. There must have been, I mean, we certainly don't know, you know, this for certain, but when you think about it, it's absolute common sense. There must have been a big hook for them, you know, and certainly we know of some of the people involved who were scientists, and they wanted to get, you know, the cutting-edge information, and they would do anything for it, even you know, listen to channelers. But some of the, obviously the first information they would get would have to be extremely worth having.
Hmm.
So whoever was actually giving them this information as a hook would know a thing or two about science or technology or whatever their thing was.
Right.
And, you know, who would be best placed to do that?
And, you know, they also choose still to connect this new religion potentially then with something ancient, something old, which implies to me that again, this is going back to some of the more, you know, ancient cults that have been, you know, orchestrating and setting up religions all along, you know, in one way or another, if you look at it. I mean, we have to entertain the idea that this, you know, can be real. There might really be an Ennead out there. These are powerful archetypes of nine or what have you. This could be any kind of thing going on here. But to me, it feels like they're still connecting the new age with the old age religion, if you will. Any comments?
Yeah. Well, one thing that puts the whole thing into focus and did for us, because we seem to have been firing off in all kind of different directions about ancient Egypt and extraterrestrials and the Pentagon and CIA. But the thing that makes this kind of not a kind of speculative joining of the dots is a very important report that was produced in 1968, and it was produced by our old friends SRI International at the behest of the US government. It was a report called Changing Images of Man.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, I might have got the date wrong. It might have been early 70s. But what had prompted this report was all the changes that had happened, predominantly in America, but mainly in the West, during the 1960s. You know, the whole kind of hippie thing and the self-realization movement. And there was a big fear on the part of the American establishment, and one presumes other establishments as well, that this was undermining what they called the traditional institutions of authority, the state, the church, everything. And they commissioned SRI to do a kind of big social study into these changes and where they would lead. And when SRI produced this report, I mean, they began it in 68, they reported in 1973, they'd come to the conclusion that all those changes that had eroded respect for or raised challenges to the traditional institutions and traditional authority, those changes were irreversible. There was nothing that the government could do to turn things back to how they were in the 1950s. But what they recommended was, if these things are irreversible, then what the government should do is not attempt to neutralize them and change things back, because that couldn't be done. It recommended that the government try to take control of them.
Mm.
Now, these are things obviously fed into what became the New Age movement. And the report also concluded saying what we need to do is what we need is emotive symbols, archetypal symbols, in order to create, you know, basically a new religion. And what it actually said was that where we can find these archetypal emotive ideas is the symbols of ancient Egypt as transmitted to us through the ideas of Freemasonry.
Hmm.
Now, this is an official government-backed report
Yeah.
done by one of the leading American institutes, basically saying the government should try and take control of, or try and take control of the way things are changing, using the symbols of ancient Egypt and the ideals of Freemasonry. And it's actually in black and white. And get a copy of that report.
Wow. Fascinating. You
know, we've been trying to put all this idea together. Why are intelligence agencies and people connected with this SRI International trying to manipulate ideas to do with ancient Egypt? Why are they trying to seed in these ideas which are obviously taken from Freemasonry? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? We found this report and it told us why they were doing it.
Yeah.
So all these things that we kind of, you know, we seem to have been sort of fitting together as a jigsaw and, you know, thinking, well, maybe we're right, maybe we're wrong. No, because the people are, if there's any one main group of people pulling the strings or been involved in every aspect of this, including the Council of Nine, the research on Uri Geller, the hunt for things in ancient Egypt during the 1990s and earlier than that, who have a definite connection with the Advocacy Foundation, it's SRI International.
Mm.
Their report from the early 70s told you what they were going to do.
Yeah.
So,
wow, it's really interesting, and I'm reminded of another kind of side study I know that was done in relationship to the changing images of man was something called a computer-based exploration of alternative futures for mankind 2000 was this was a report was in correlation to changing images of man, and they had this interesting quote. I'm just going to read this here quickly. It said, in the organization of a civilization of the future, we anticipate that the individualistically oriented man will become an anachronism. Indeed, he will be viewed as a threat to the group organization as well as to his fellow man. Hence, as stated, he in all likelihood will have a few individual expectations. While such a picture may not be pleasant to contemplate when viewed with our present orientation and value judgment, we would be amiss to deal with an unrealistic imagery that would blind us to future reality. And that, to me, suggests that it goes back to this idea again of control, and that these guys potentially from Stanford and other universities have come to the conclusion that in order to control the population, if you will, of the future, we need to in some way cull individualism, and we need to bring in potentially then a new kind of religion, and ultimately we need to control the human beings in order to maintain security and control for all. So it's a very kind of dangerous image or picture that is starting to emerge here from this.
Yes, it is. Actually, Henrik, I was just thinking that, you know, I mean, Clive and I respect the ancient Egyptian gods, what we read about them, what we know of them. We think, you know, that as archetypes, that they have a lot to teach us and a lot of comfort there. But I think we'd be the first to say also that, you know, if you have a vision or somebody channels some spirit who claims to be, you know, a god, or one of the ancient Egyptian gods, and even if you are convinced this is true, I think our advice would be, if they tell you to believe or to do something that is against your civilized feelings, against your feelings of integrity, don't do it. Don't
right.
listen to them
yep.
and walk away.
Yep, I totally agree. There's so many much more things we could touch upon, but we need to round things up here for this time, and this is definitely something to keep track on, and as you guys have stated, this is not something that kind of ended, if you will, with when the new millennium came about, but this is potentially something that is being projected forward a bit now, and we need to be aware of this in regards to 2012 and all of this that is going on. So it's very interesting and very informative to have you both on to talk about this. I guess that the Stargate Conspiracy is available as a book through your website. Is that correct, guys?
Yes, it is.
Yep, yep.
Okay, and give us the URL again for people that potentially might have just tuned into this second segment here.
Yes, it's our surname, so picknetprints.com, picknetprints, all one word, PICKNETTPRINCE. And that, yes, that has something about all of our books, but particularly Stargate Conspiracy, which came out in 1999. It's still in print, so you know, it's still being read. But we're sure there's a lot more that could be added now.
Mm, interesting.
I'm particularly looking forward to 2012. You know, is that now the time they're focusing on?
Exactly. Indeed. We'll try to keep track on everything as it is playing out, as it were, in the world. And again, I want to thank you both for coming on the program and sharing some of your research and some of your theories with us. It's very interesting indeed. And again, thank you very much for coming on, Clive and Lynn.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.